Welcome to iNurse Radio, brought to you by the International Nurses Association.
Hello, and welcome once again to iNurse Radio, where we feature some of the world's top experts in the field of nursing. Our goal, with the help of our guests, is to shed light on health-related topics that are important to all of us. Today, we will be speaking with geriatric nurse specialist and author, Paula Guybison. She has extensive experience in the field of gerontology. Gerontology is the scientific study of aging and focuses on addressing issues that elderly people often encounter. One of her goals as an author is to provide information about proper caregiving for seniors. Her book, titled Golden Independence, A Guide to Elderly Care and Maintaining Senior Independence, gives essential techniques to help seniors stay safe while at the same time maintaining their independence. Her audience typically ranges from 20 years old to 50 years old, or she refers to them as the sandwich generation. As we all know, family members aging can lead to some concerns regarding their independence. With nearly 20 years experience working in a geriatric clinic, Paula has heard numerous concerns from her patients and their family members, and she understands the emotional burden this creates. With the proper information, the quality of life can significantly improve for the elderly, as well as for their family members. For more information on caregiving, you can visit her website at caregivernurse.com, which offers more information about her book, presentations on senior care, and more information regarding her background as well. In fact, Paula has a new book coming out around August titled Don't Forget Your Hat, which focuses on Alzheimer's disease and the effects it has on patients as well as their family members. Nurse Paula Guybison, it is a pleasure to have you here today.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Fantastic. Paula,
I welcome the opportunity to discuss these issues, so thank you.
Very good. Again, we love to have you. Paula, with your experience as a medical provider, could you share with us some of the more common concerns that people have about their aging family members?
Well, many times over the years, I've received that call from an adult child saying, you know, I'm not sure if my parents are still able to live by themselves. And that's like actually a whole myriad of questions, you know, cognitively. Are they going to get around their house? Do they need to make changes in their house, like a ramp or some grab bars or something? And where it starts really is the planning and communicating to try to let the people know that, you know, they deserve to be as independent as possible. We never want to lose sight of dignity when we're dealing with any age of generations, when we're dealing with people, but trying to keep people safe means trying to avoid crisis. So if we can communicate how to prevent crisis, how to support a person's independence, that's really where the whole thing starts, and really taking a look at what the situation is for them.
Well, that's totally logical. Maintaining independence can clearly be a struggle, both physically and emotionally. Are there any exercises or perhaps techniques that you suggest to your patients to help them stay physically and mentally fit?
Right. Well, that's two kind of separate things. Physically, the best thing a person can do as they're getting older is to be able to stay mobile, keep walking. So what I advise people is if you can go outside and walk and it's safe and the weather is good, do that and then you enjoy the fresh air as well. On the other hand, if you live in an apartment complex, then there's hallways and things like that to be able to get around. For individuals who are living in a house and they like to watch TV, I always recommend every time a television commercial comes on, stand up and walk around the room. Just get moving. Just don't sit there because ambulation is such a ticket to being able to stay in your own home. Now, mentally, there are a lot of games and things that do help a person exercise their thinking capacities. My favorite mental exercise actually is socializing. My example that I use for families is that if I were to ask you, do you want a sweater? And they have to think about it. So you have to be able to hear what I'm saying and process that information, because what you're really wanting to know is if they're warm enough then they have to turn that information back. They have to, you know, first figure out in the environment, am I warm enough, am I not, put it back in the contents of the question, and then speak, in other words, use language again. So just a mere asking, do you need a sweater, and saying, oh, no, I'm fine, you've used multiple parts of your brain. So when you socialize and you talk about the family, the weather, whatever you want to, you're using so many parts of your brain without even realizing it. Plus, it's a real mood stabilizer, too, because it gives you that feedback that helps you to feel better as well. So keep moving, keep socializing, talking with people. Those are some of the best things that you can do.
Well, that's great advice, Paula. That being said, and you've already raised, I think, an interesting point, but are there any activities that family members can do with their loved ones who might be struggling to be independent?
Well, there's a number of different things that I suggest. I always like getting out family albums as an activity, you know, remembering those happy times when there are weddings in the family or family get-together. People who have been around for a number of decades have pictures from way back when, and that makes them think about the positive times and helps them to think about different family members and everything and enjoys that family moment, that socializing time. The other thing is that if they really are not sure about the independence issue, when I worked at the Geriatric Assessment Clinic, we had an entire team of professionals, and that is really the best place to start, you know, to have a person's mobility assessed, to find out, are they having any cognitive issues? We had pharmacists that would evaluate all their medications, including over-the-counter medications. Sometimes people self-prescribe, and a medication that might be really good if you're 29 is quite prohibitive if you're over 70. And then to have a doctor who is aware of all of the complex healthcare issues that that have to do with a person as they're getting older, that can really put together a plan for the family and the person themselves so that they can support what a person is still capable of doing. People want to drive for as many years as what they can, but let's just make sure that it's safe. And if there are areas that need support, well, then where are those supports? What are the options? What do they need? What are the different kind of, so in other words, are they having trouble remembering their medications? Are they having trouble with falls? That those specific areas can be addressed and not the whole situation, you know, just to be able to keep a person in their own home.
Oh, that's a great point. It really is. What would you say are some of the bigger misconceptions or even mistakes that people might make when trying to help family members become independent?
Well, you know, one of the most common things is that people, as they start getting older and might show signs of forgetfulness, they might downplay it and say, well, mom is 80 years old, so she's not remembering, or maybe they forget to do this or repeat themselves. But, you know, aging all by itself does not cause memory loss. Alzheimer's is not an aging disease, but there are things that affect a person's cognition. A bladder infection, sometimes, like I mentioned before, over-the-counter medications might cause a person to be kind of foggy-minded. Sleep problems, people who are sleep-deprived at any age can show cognitive problems. A person who's depressed might not have the effort to be able to stay in a conversation, and it looks like they might have dementia when all they need is to have their depression treated. And one of the biggest things that I have seen is hearing loss. As a person gets older, sometimes hearing is not what it once was. Sitting down at the dining room table and they have a conversation, and the older person with a bit of hearing challenge doesn't quite get the whole conversation, so they're still processing the information while topic number two starts to get discussed. While topic number two is being discussed, they're still thinking about the first thing that was on the table that they were talking about. Well, now, 4 hours later, that second topic gets brought up by one of the family members, and the elderly person says, no, no one told me about it. That's not confusion. That's not memory loss. That's hearing loss. So if a person is showing issues of having forgetfulness, it is not normal aging. Find out what's going on so that if a person has something that's treatable that is causing the confusion, you want that to get treated so that they can be as high-functioning as possible. If it is an early sign of what we call mild cognitive impairment or the first starts of Alzheimer's or dementia, also you don't want to wait. There are some things that can be done to delay the process, to keep people as high a functioning as possible. And if you wait until after there's an issue or after things have progressed, a lot of things are just not as effective. So just because somebody's in their 80s and showing some signs of confusion, don't just think that, well, that's what their birth certificate says. No, there might be an explanation, and you don't want to miss time. Time is precious, people are precious, and find out what's causing that forgetfulness. Treat that cause if it's treatable, and if it's not, then be prepared for what the future has to hold.
Surely, and I think most listeners, I think, can relate pretty directly with the scenario that you just painted. That's
mm-hmm,
great information.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, of course, several ways to help assist with independence, and that ranges everywhere from hiring an aide to, you know, purchasing one of those remotes attached to a necklace in order to signal for emergency
mm-hmm.
response, and even placing
right.
family members
right.
directly into nursing facilities. But
right.
Paula, from your professional experience, what is your suggestion to those family members that are debating these options? Are there pros and cons
okay.
for each, or is one clearly better than the other?
Actually, every person is an individual. And a lot of times what older people think, hey, I'm in my own home, I can do everything myself. So they don't want those emergency response devices. They don't want help coming in. They think that that's a sign of dependence. But what I try to explain to people is that those are actually items that are tickets to remaining independent, tickets to remaining in your own home. Don't think of it as a device that you're more dependent, but the fact that your kids can sleep better at night knowing that if you need them, they're going to know it right away as opposed to knowing later. So having an emergency call system for somebody who lives by themselves, it can make a huge difference. I have cared for people who have fallen during the night or early evening even and spent the entire night on the floor, and a lot of times their independence is lost. That crisis is the last thing that can happen, and they're no longer capable of staying in their own home. So to have supportive devices, to have items, the pros really are that they are tickets to independence. The cons is that sometimes it causes a few ruffled feathers to think, why do you mean that I need help kind of attitude? But the whole thing is avoiding the crisis. And if it does mean a confrontation verbally, and maybe I don't mean confrontation, but a situation where you don't want to, ruffle mom's feathers and thinking that, hey, maybe she can't be by herself anymore. But that is so much easier to deal with than having a broken hip or falling down the stairs or an inadvertent fire or any of the crises that could happen without realizing, you know, how endangered a person might be or how little that it takes, even if a person's stopping by once a day. That can make a huge difference in keeping their independence. So I like to teach families to use the word ticket to independence when they're talking about devices and people coming in and helping a person out. They're helping to promote the independence, not take away the independence.
Absolutely. And in that capacity, it sounds almost like you're doing social work or a political go-between.
And that can be very helpful too, right?
Absolutely. Now, Paula, unfortunately, as you know, there are those that might have budgetary restraints. They might not necessarily have the ability to send their loved ones to nursing facilities or have an aide come in. Are there any suggestions that you might have for those who do have such budgetary restraints?
There are a number of suggestions. One of the biggest things is the state agencies are available locally. They might have some funding or some helpful resources. Also, private agencies, don't count them out because sometimes they have sliding scales for people who may not be able to afford one thing or another, but they might have some other options. The other thing that I have found is that many families are willing to help out, but mom or dad is saying, no, we can take care of ourselves, when families are right there willing to provide some of the help and overnight help and things like that. Neighbors, church, and faith organizations may be helpful. And you know what? My favorite resource for what to do if a person cannot afford this or not sure about that, local support groups are usually made up of people who have already walked this walk and know where to turn. I'm currently involved with what's called Parkinson's Network North, It's a Parkinson's support group for Northwestern Lower Michigan. And, you know, we're in tap with people who have needed several different things regarding assistance in the home and know what support services are available. Support groups are great to sit down and talk about things, but it's amazing the educational information that are available through support groups as well. And they may have answers that you didn't even know you had questions about. So definitely, you know, going online and seeking out what is available in your own area. And most people will probably find out that there's more available than what they realize.
Absolutely. And information can only be a good thing.
Exactly.
Paula, many seniors tend to be on multiple medications, especially as they get older.
Yes,
and obviously
true.
It can be extremely concerning since it's crucial to be aware that the correct medication is being taken as well as the proper doses. In your experience, how do you typically approach this situation with patients and their family members?
Right. All things medications, there are three things to remember. Number one, use a pill organizer. When people take pills out of the bottle, sometimes they get missed, and that might be unfortunate. But the worst thing is if a person gets up in the morning, takes their medications, and then as the day goes on, they decide to take a nap. They get up, think, oh, I need to take my medication. They take a second dose, and then it becomes a medical crisis. Whereas if you have a pill organizer and a calendar, Tuesday's pills need to get taken, and you don't take Wednesday's pills till Wednesday, that can really help avoid a crisis with that. The other thing is to always, always have a complete list of medications. Many older people have their primary nurse practitioner, physician assistant, primary health care doctor, but they also have other specialists, a neurologist, a urologist, gynecologist, whoever, and all of these are ordering medications. If you don't take the list with you to all of the appointments, they may not realize that this specialist doesn't know that specialist has ordered either conflicting medications or medications that are redundant. So you need to have the medication list with you every appointment that you go to. And make sure, the third thing is, make sure to take with you on that list which medications you need refills for, because now a lot of medications are a lot more economical if you get them by mail order. So you go into your appointment, you don't realize you need refills. You get back home, oh, no. Well, now you have to call back in, and sometimes, logistically, it takes a day or two before that refill can be taken care of. And if it's mail order, it may be even more of a delay. You don't want to miss medications because they didn't realize that you were running out of refills. So use a pill organizer. Always keep a complete list, including over-the-counter medications that you yourself decide to take. And make sure that you're aware of what refills you need new prescriptions for before going into a healthcare provider's appointment.
It's a great suggestion, it really is. Now, we came across some really startling statistics, in my opinion, from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in regards to falls among senior citizens. One of the statistics which stood out was that one out of three adults aged 65 mm-hmm. or older fall each year. And unfortunately, it's less than half of people bring this to the attention of their medical physician. My question is, regardless if a senior falls and doesn't experience any pain, should they still seek medical attention?
Well, you know what? That's an excellent question. Because, you know, it's easy, well, maybe not easy, but it's clear that when a person falls and is injured, you're going to call 911, you're going to get emergency personnel out there. Those decisions are pretty cut and dry. When a person is hurting and not sure with, sure, the best thing to do is to call your health care provider and follow their instructions. Go to urgent care, see how you're next morning, whatever that health care provider decides. However, what I recommend is you keep a blank piece of paper on your refrigerator with a magnet so it's always there. What you do is anytime something happens, you write it down, because falls sometimes are actually a symptom of something else that is much bigger than that. In other words, why might an older person fall? If they rise, they go from sitting to standing, and their blood pressure drops, it's called orthostasis, and they may wind up falling down. Well, the fall might not be the problem, but the orthostasis might be a genuine problem. Maybe their blood pressure medication may need to be adjusted. If people are having trouble all of a sudden walking a straight line and losing their balance, it may mean Parkinson's. if they stand or just walking across the room and they suddenly fall and don't realize why. Perhaps they had a TIA, a transient ischemic attack, and if that's true, is there a stroke that's pending? So all of those things, the falls might not be the problem, but it might be a sign or symptom that something else is a problem, and that needs to be taken care of. Okay, if they're not injured at the moment, then, it, you know, okay, am I really going to call my doctor every time I stub my toe? Probably not. But if you write it down, keep it on the log, on a piece of paper, on the refrigerator, what happened? I don't know why I fell. Well, that's important for the doctor to know because the doctor needs to figure out what happened, what's going on. Let's double-check the blood pressure. Let's double-check what medications you're taking. What over-the-counter medications are you taking that are interacting with the prescription medication? There's a whole realm of questions to ask, but you don't necessarily need to call right away. But write it down, and when you go in for your appointment, take that piece of paper with you, especially if you have more than one fall, because then it's like, okay, do we have a pattern started here? And again, I can't reinforce this enough. Before there's a crisis, before there's a broken hip, let's make sure that things are done properly and can keep people mobile. So do those falls might be telling you something other than just a simple fall.
No, you raise excellent points, and clearly this is a topic that you are not just an expert at, but passionate about. Can you talk to us a bit about your book? I mean, it clearly comes from a great place. Your book, Golden Independence, I've noticed that, you know, it's laid out in an interesting way. You're very specific about certain goals laid out and whatnot. Yes. Can you talk a bit about that?
Right. There's three separate sections. The first section has to do with quality of life. We're talking about bathing issues. We're talking about hearing. I go into a lot more detail about hearing. I have a chapter devoted just on how to communicate with your healthcare provider. That's a very important chapter. Living alone and calling for help, nutrition, personal care, and so on and so forth. And in each chapter, there's why this is an issue. What are the problems? And then there are goals. What do we want to achieve with this? We want people to not have health issues. We don't want them to have skin problems. We don't want them to have falls. Or we don't want adverse findings. We certainly don't want crises. So pursuant to that, then we have interventions. Okay, I have designed in the falls chapter specifically how to make a bedroll that anyone can do in their own home. You don't need any equipment other than a big towel. And then you can prevent people from falling out of bed. So very practical interventions. I also have included in each chapter when to call for help, you know, who might be helpful, when to seek out other attention. And each chapter is followed with, at the very bottom one, what the doctor needs to know, and meaning not just doctor, but nurse practitioner, healthcare provider of any kind, what specifically are they looking for, and what information you need to bring to appointment. So that's just the first section. The middle section has to do with behavior issues. Now, this is not a mental health book, but many people with older family members have trouble with insomnia. They just don't sleep at night. Or maybe they started to wander. Boredom is here, that people want to stay in their own home, but they don't do anything. Well, quality of life is very important, and keeping people busy is also part of that thing, a part of the whole situation. Refusing care, what do we do if people are refusing to bathe? How do we address that issue? So those are the middle chapters, and again, when to call for help, what the doctor needs to know, what are simplistic interventions that the family needs to be aware of, are all included in each of those 20 chapters. And then the last part is really zero-bound and keeping people in their own home. 20 chapters dealing with a walk through the house, so that if an ambulance comes at 3 o'clock in the morning, will they find you? You know, it's dark outside. Where is the number on the house? If you built this house in 1952 and had this really ornate number on the side of the house, but now the oak tree is high and you can't see the number on the house, how are they going to find you? And then you walk into the house. Is anybody going to fall? What about the rugs? What about grab bars in the bathroom? What about lighting? People always talk about that they need to be light enough. Well, you know, there's contradiction to that, too. If a person has glaucoma, they may have issues with glare. Bright lights might be worse than darkness. So having soft lighting for people with glaucoma and then making sure with people with macular degeneration that things are not in the way.
So with each of these chapters, it takes that into consideration, what a person's mobility is, what their visual issues are, the goals are safety, the goals are keeping people there, who to call for help, what might be helpful, and again, does the doctor need to be involved in any of this? Do they need to be included in whatever, in trying to just to keep people in their own home?
Oh, that's clearly your level of experience and expertise.
I'm really proud of the book because go ahead.
No, absolutely. Please go on.
Well, the book is really a summation of my 30 total years of nursing. So most of it I have learned firsthand, and being able to use that information for others is really what I'm trying to accomplish.
Absolutely fantastic. So good to have handy. And,
uh-huh.
and as we mentioned earlier, you do have another book coming out
mm-hmm.
about Alzheimer's and the effect that
yes.
it has on family members. And we were hoping, fingers crossed, could you give us perhaps a sneak peek into that content?
Well, I would love to. Don't Forget Your Hat is the title of the book. And the hat is kind of a thing at the beginning where there's a bit of a conflict between the mom who has Alzheimer's and the daughter. And the mom has forgetfulness but doesn't forget about hats, and the daughter wishes she does. But things change over time, and what happens in the end, then you will have to read the book. But the bottom line is, the reason that I wanted to do a book about Alzheimer's, my father had Alzheimer's disease, and I watched the progression that he went through. I watched the progression that my mom went through caring for him and my siblings and everything. So I've seen Alzheimer's disease from both sides. As a nurse, I've seen many, many people with Alzheimer's, and I've witnessed it firsthand as a family member as well. And the bottom line is that Ella, the person in the book, remains precious. She's still an individual. She is a human being that deserves dignity and respect. And the growth and the charm between mom and the daughters continues to become more fluent and positive as the book progresses. So Alzheimer's, I call it, I've heard others call it, the disease of a thousand goodbyes. They lose different things. The daughter, Naomi's birthday, is a very poignant part of the book in trying to deal with the fact that she's got a mom who's becoming more and more forgetful, even as to who she is, and Naomi's wanting to appreciate here and now, remember back on fond memories from when she was younger, worried about her mom's future, her own future, a lot of uncertainties, and yet through it all, the family unit becomes even stronger. And so what I have done, the reason that I wrote the book, Don't Forget Your Hat, is also an educational tool. I want to educate people about Alzheimer's disease, what it is all about. And yes, there are some very heart-wrenching things, but the people with the disease are still people. They're still individuals. They still deserve dignity, and there's no reason that should not be supported. So with the book itself, included in the book, the last part, I wrote a play based on Don't Forget Your Hat, and it's just a very simplistic play. It's a one set, three acts, three people, the mom and her two daughters. And the reason I did that is that then support groups across the country or wherever can use this story to put on their own little play, their own little story, so that they can educate other people what Alzheimer's is all about, and that it's not the disaster that some people fear. I know with my dad, before he was diagnosed, he was crying that he was fearful of Alzheimer's. And yet when he got the diagnosis and we knew what we were dealing with, we dealt with medications, we dealt with a lot of issues. And when you're dealing with it with the respect that the person deserves to have, it's very different than that. So I'm hoping with Don't Forget Your Hat, the book and the play, becomes a resource for support groups and community groups, that they can use that to tell Ella's story and to be able that people can see that this disease of a thousand goodbyes does not take away that person.
Well, it's very, very powerful. And I think you're spot on. It really does lend itself well to storytelling, because these are concepts that almost everyone can wrap their mind
right,
around if they don't
right.
have personal experiences,
right.
they have fears. So well done on that. Well done on that.
Oh,
I did want to
thank
shift
you.
Gears just a little bit. Of course. Again, I wanted to shift gears just a touch about just back to your personal experience as a medical provider.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, you know, trying to help a senior become independent and helping families deal with diseases like Alzheimer's and the like can be just devastating, and I'm sure for
mm-hmm.
for you, stressful at times. How would you say, Paula, that, you know, yourself as a medical provider, how do you stay strong during hard times like that and at the same time convince and motivate family members, you know, to do what's necessary?
Well, I tell you, the reward is an intrinsic reward. When I can sit down with a family and show them in their house how they need to move this filing cabinet so the person with the walker can get through here and they can do this and do that, what I see, the twinkles in their eyes, the gratitude in, oh, thank you for helping me, the positiveness, and I share some of the pictures and things on my website of different people who have enjoyed reading Golden Independence and you've been helpful. That is a reward in itself, that just the fact that I can positively impact other people. When I was part of the geriatric clinic, one of the things that I would do along with some of my other team members would sit down with the family after we were done with all of our recommendations and go through with them here, 1, 2, 3, 4, and to watch their shoulders relax, to watch the twinkles in their eyes, oh, we can do this, this is better. That is a reward all by itself. It is motivating, and it makes me want to start my next book. I haven't got that put together just yet, but if I can keep positively affecting people's lives, I can't think of anything more rewarding than to see people that now have information, that know where to find the tools, and can have a better quality of life based on the information that I can provide. That, to me, is stress management, because I just feel energized when I can sit down with a family and I know that they're better off than me being there. I want to help somebody else, too. It's very motivating.
Well, that's just wonderful, Paula. And unfortunately, we are just about running out of time. But for any of those listeners that are looking for more information, looking to get their hands on the book that's out, Golden Independence, or the book that's coming out, Don't Forget Your Hat, or even just to contact you, would the caregivernurse.com be the best website for them to use?
That is, because on there it has my contact information. You can send me an email. The last page has contact, and I will return every email. It also has a toll-free number. People are welcome to call me. If you have questions, concerns, clarifications, whatever, suggestions, I'm always wanting to talk to people. And so either call me on my toll-free number that's on the website under the contact information or send me an email. Caregiversnurse.com has all that information.
That's fantastic. And again, that's caregivernurse.com, all one word.
It's plural, caregivers, nurse.
Oh, pardon.
Yes.
Caregiver. So we're going to spell that out for folks. It's C-A-R-E. GIVERSNURSE.com.
Correct.
Fantastic. Paula, thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you.
You've been an absolutely fantastic guest.
Thank you.
Here as well. And thank you, of course, to you, the listeners, as well. So for iNurse Radio, this is John Rivera saying thanks for tuning in and stay well.